fake news.
I think fake news always been there. Do journalists spread fake news?
This is extremely dangerous to our democracy.
Yes, they do. The media world is ruled by all the politicians around the world.
Nina Zanya, a successful TV personality, entrepreneur, and now fashion designer. She has been face and ambassador of major brands. The brands include Sky News, NBC, Channel 7, and many more.
It's the way the governments want to give their message to the people. That's how they put out the news. When September 11th happened, the moment the first plane went to hit that building, immediately Bin Laden's photo came up and said, there's a terrorist attack. How would they know within less than a few minutes that it's a terrorist attack? Yeah. And I had that all my life. And it's been a very big struggle to show myself that, you know, I'm not that person you think I am. You have to take me seriously.
Nina, welcome to Zeno Talks. It's an absolute honor to have you here with us today.
It is my honor to be here. Honestly, it's been so long, Omar, since I saw you.
I know.
And look at us now.
I know. It's been a minute. It has been a minute.
It's crazy how the time goes by so quickly.
I know.
I mean, it feels like it was yesterday. Me and you were standing on the stage.
Yep.
And our agents were saying, we're opening this amazing platform. You're going to be the presenters.
Yeah.
And look where we're at.
100%. But the only difference is you got younger and I got older.
Oh, that's not true.
I look way older.
Oh, no, you don't. You look manly. I became a mother. I feel like old and outdated now.
No, I swear to God. No, you still look beautiful. It's so good to see you here again.
You're so kind. It's always a pleasure.
So, Nina, you know, just to recap for the audience, you know, a lot of people know you here in the UAE scene, especially in the media sector. Like, you've been on so many different programs, so many different shows. But if we can recap, can you just tell people a little bit about your career, how you got to that, to being on the world stage, like with the UN, working with organizations like that? So tell us your story.
Oh, well, I will try to make it as short as possible because it's very long.
Yeah.
No, the thing is, you know, I started my career at the age of 14 in Sweden, hosting a children's show.
Okay.
And during that time, because my dad is a former diplomat, so they saw me at one of his government meetings and they said, well, we want Nina to work at this channel.
Yeah.
And that time I developed a big, big love for television and broadcasting. Mm. Then I continued working as at the same time I was studying. Mm-hmm. Then I went back to New York from Sweden, went to university, studied journalism and also media law. Mm-hmm. And during that time, again, I was work experiencing, but that time for NBC America, which was quite a big deal because, yes, it was a huge deal. Mm-hmm. And I think the only reason they took me in was because I already had a few years of experience in television. Mm. I was already a host.
Yeah.
Imagine, I was 16 years, almost 17 actually.
Yeah.
And that work experience developed to working with NBC.
Yeah.
But during that time, I also went to Sydney, Australia. Mm-hmm. To Gold Coast, Australia, to Bond University to do my master's degree. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Channel 7 in Brisbane hired me to do my work experience,
which is also a very big deal.
Very big deal.
Okay.
And already, you know, I had like almost 10 years of TV in my pocket.
Yeah, yeah.
So I felt
Were you friends with Rupert Murdoch?
Actually, I kind of was with his son. We met a lot of time.
Okay.
Lucky. And his then wife, supermodel Sarah O'Hare. Mm-hmm. We were not very close, but we would always see each other at events and at, like, you know, when they were cutting their ribbons, especially in Australia, because I started also working for Sky News in Sydney.
Wow.
But I was very young. Because I started early, I was the youngest person in that crowd, especially in the Sydney crowd.
Yeah. Do you feel, Nina, that you studying and learning media and broadcast, like, but also having worked at a young age, by the age of 14, helped you, like, propel you to those positions in working at NBC, then Channel 7? Did that?
Absolutely, absolutely. But
were there, like, some key takeaways from an academic perspective, or
you know, can I just say something to be honest? like, education is extremely important.
True.
Extremely important in everybody's life.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, in certain fields, I don't think education is the number one key. It's your character and personality when it comes, for example, to television, to media. Of course, you need to have a journalistic approach to it. You need to learn the all the ins and outs of journalism, but you don't need to have a master's and honors degree to be able to work in television, especially nowadays. People don't even have any education whatsoever.
Yeah.
And they can be almost as good as us that have all the education in the world.
100%.
So I think it's about your character, your development, your self-development, and how you are in the social scene.
Yeah.
I think that's the most important education.
So, you know, Nina, I agree with you 100%. And anybody who meets you in public will just know that you are definitely a TV personality. Like, you have, you definitely have the personality, the face for it. You have all, you tick all the boxes. But let me ask you this. Since you worked at NBC and all of those things, one of the things that we've seen in media particularly that kind of rose since like maybe 2016 was fake news.
Yes.
Was fake news around at the time when you were doing all that?
Absolutely. I think fake news always been there.
But how did you maintain your credibility?
But the thing is, I tell you something, like I think fake news always been there. It always like all the TV is, I should not say that, but it is all political. The media world is ruled by all the politicians around the world. So fake news always been there. Even before we had television, it was propaganda, it was advertisements and stuff, always been fake. It's the way the governments want to give their message to the people. That's how they put out the news. But it's nothing new. It's always been there in centuries.
But then when you were working at these establishments, would there be a chance for you to like hold on to what your own integrity versus what they would want you to be talking about or how they want you to frame that particular story?
Absolutely. No. There was. So for me, you know how I am. I have a very strong will. I'm very black and white.
I know.
You cannot, you know, make me be something that I don't want to be, even in my private life or professional life. But I think I was quite young at that age to be, because I wasn't reporting news, to be fair, when I was at Sky News, I was reporting more of the lifestyle sections.
Okay.
So I was not told what to do with those sectors. Okay. But if it was today, I don't know what I would have answered you.
Okay.
Because at the end of the day, you know, everybody has their job.
True.
Their job pays their lives, families, food.
Mm-hmm.
So do journalists spread fake news? Yes, they do.
Okay.
Do all of them think that's right? No, they don't.
Okay.
But do some of them feel that they have to do because that's their income? Yes, there are.
Interesting.
So it is, you know, there are so many factors around this that you cannot control as a person that is hired under a big corporation.
Yeah.
There is like no one that can, you know, let you do what you want, not only in media, but in any corporation you work for, unfortunately.
Yeah. So working at... Yes, for sure, of course.
But one thing I can tell you that I realized the news is fake is when September 11th happened.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite young, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And the moment the first plane went to hit
the building.
Immediately Bin Laden's photo came up and said there's a terrorist attack. How would they know within less than a few minutes that it's a terrorist attack? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And immediately it's a terrorist attack. And it wasn't the second plane, it wasn't the third, it was nothing that was going on. And that's the time I started to question it extremely, because that time it was on social media, so we didn't know real news, fake news. Everybody thought the news is real. But it never been.
It
real,
wasn't exactly.
Ever.
Okay.
But that was the first time I remember I started questioning. It's like, wait a minute, how do they know this is a terrorist attack when the first plane only hit the building? And immediately I remember it came, Bin Laden's photo came up and said, this is a terrorist attack. It's Bin Laden behind us.
Yeah.
Because nobody took up on themselves that moment that it was a terrorist attack.
Mm-mm. So you worked at Sky News in Australia, and then is that when you came to the UAE after that?
No, I went back to New York. Okay. And then I came to the UAE.
Okay.
Yes, after Australia. I was in Australia for 5.5 years.
Okay. And you continued working in the television space when
yes,
you came here,
all
right?
All the time. I started working in Australia, it was a Channel 7. It was a show called Creek to Coast. And then I was working in Hot FM, which was a radio station. Then Sydney for Sky News.
Okay.
Yes.
And then New York.
And New York, I went back and I was working. It was funny because I was their longest work experience person they ever had. It was quite funny. Mm-hmm. Yes, with NBC. But while I was there, I developed a show, a format. And that was the first format that I developed.
Okay.
13 episodes. It was before all this reality shows coming out. It was at that time, I think it was Big Brother and it was Top Model.
Mm.
It was Top Model and Big Brother.
Yeah.
Actually, that time.
Okay.
It was one of those few realities that were there. So then I wrote a script about dogs and their dog owners, a reality show.
Mm-hmm.
And there were no programs about dogs.
Okay.
This is the time we're talking about 25 years ago. And I remember my boss looked at me and laughed at me. He's like, are you serious? I was like, I think this is going to be a primetime show.
Yeah.
He's like, you're working here for us. We have hopes for you to become very serious television personality in the whole United States.
Yeah, yeah.
And you come up with this to me saying you wrote a 13 episode about dogs and dog owners? What is this? So he was laughing. I was like, no, but I think it's going to be crazy.
I think it would work,
What I researched that time was, you know, when Paris Hilton came out with her little Tinkerbell, the little dog, I realized that dogs are multi-billion dollar
industry.
And forget about like dog food, dog clothes, dog grooming. And dogs are in all commercials, you see.
Dog hotels.
Like, it's a crazy industry. So that's the reason I developed that show. And I knew I'm going to get a lot of sponsors, a lot of fundings to develop this show.
It's pretty smart.
But then he laughed at me. He's like, no, we can't. Then I was like, okay, I went back to Sweden because they wanted me to co-produce, to be a line producer for a reality show they had in Sweden. So I went to Sweden. I was line producing the show. And after when it finished, I went back to my old boss and said, listen, because imagine I was working in TV since I was 14. Mm. I have this show. Excuse me, I have to correct myself. No. After NBC, I went to Southern Star in Australia, one of the biggest production companies that I used to work for as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, listen, guys, I already have this show. I think it's going to be prime time. Let's take this show out in Australia. Again, they laughed at me, said, no, Nina. And we're talking about big guys, big, huge guys, corporations that are major.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I didn't let it go. And imagine I was only like 23 years old or 24.
Yeah,
23. And I was like, no, it's something in my gut saying that this is going to go.
Yeah.
And then I went to Sweden. And Sweden was Strix Television, which is, you know, Strix that did The Survivor, the biggest, largest production company in the whole Scandinavia.
Mm.
And I went to my boss. His name was Robert Ashberg. If you Google him, he's like Rupert Murdoch of Scandinavia. And I said, listen, I have this. And I believe in this. He laughed at me. He's like, Nina, this is ridiculous. But you know what? I believe in you. You're very special. I give you the funding from our company.
Mm-hmm.
Do the pilot. And then we will see how it goes. Story short, we did it. It became a prime time and it was sold to 27 countries.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
And I was 24 years old.
Wow.
So that is the time I realized, you know what? When I have something in my gut, I never give up. And people know I don't give up. If I say I'm going to do something, I do it. And I don't care. Yeah. How many knows? How many people would laugh at me in my face?
Mm.
I go for it. And I had a lot of laughs in my face because of the certain way I look.
Mm.
Nobody could take me seriously because they saw this pretty girl, because they thought that time pretty girls that are like petite. I'm not saying, oh, I'm pretty.
No, you are.
I'm not saying that. But she's young. Yeah. She's like, you know, blonde, skinny, long blonde hair. She cannot be smart.
Mm.
But, and I had that all my life. And it's been a very big struggle, you know, for me to show myself in big, like, corporations or levels that, you know, I'm not that person you think I am.
Yeah.
You have to take me seriously.
Yeah.
And this is long before all this movements, women empowerment, and women didn't, in my age, didn't even work. It wasn't so much like that, like full force.
Yeah.
But it was a hassle. But then I never gave up. And I was like, you know what? They can think whatever they like, but I know how my brain works and I know what's going to work.
Yeah. And you're right. You know, Nina, I think that one of the issues sometimes is even myself, like I face, especially like when I was younger, my methods are very unconventional. Like I'm very cheerful and I'm very like happy in the way that I explain ideas and stuff. And then sometimes they look at you, they think that you're crazy or you're too immature. They think you're immature or you're just too excited or you're childish. And they just think, you know, they just want to shatter your dreams so quickly before you can even make it happen. But I'm really glad that Thomas gave you a chance. Like that was
golden. Robert. He did.
Yes.
But you know, the thing is with that, because I started working so early, so I had to be extremely serious at all times.
Yeah.
So my personal life became, I want to be this funny, blubbly, you know, joke. That's how I am as a person. And that made people that don't know me, oh, how did she do that? Oh, I don't think she has a brain. Oh, and you know what? All that comes purely of jealousy. And I realized that even sometimes till today, if people don't know of me, I would walk in. It's like, oh, she worked for the United Nations. Mm. Oh, she's a speaker for SDG. Oh, she was just like, no, sweetheart, I speak 6 languages fluently. I have an honors degree. I work for the biggest production companies. Who are you to tell me? And that, I think a lot of girls and boys should learn that don't let anyone laugh at you. If the people make fun of you, mockery, or laugh at you, just know that they are purely jealous and they can never be you or never have what you have.
Yeah.
And that for them is a huge gift because it's something you're born with. And that is to all the girls and boys out there to know who you are, what you stand, and what you are capable to do. And don't let anyone say anything bad about you. Just shut them down there and there.
Yeah.
Don't let them talk to you in a certain way. Don't make them make fun of you. Because people that do that, they are extremely insecure and maybe they don't have the same talents or the same way or the same way of thinking that these people.
Exactly.
And I learned that. And I was one of the lucky ones because I always had a very high self-esteem.
Mm.
Because if I didn't have it, I would have been broken many, many years ago. Yeah.
So, Nina, when you, after working in the TV, in the media industry, what propelled you or compelled you to try to like work in the humanitarian space?
So I come from a family of that. My mother, she was the one that opened the first refugee camp in Scandinavia for helping refugee kids without their families. And my family always, and it comes already from my grandfather, my uncles.
Your father you mentioned as well, was a diplomat.
Yes, yes, from my father, my mother, my grandfather. And it's funny, it's actually come from both sides of my parents. They've always been very big believer in giving and doing a lot of charities since, like, from, you know, my mom's side, from when they were in Iran to like being in the States, in America, in New York, to Sweden. Like, it always been a tradition that we always have to give to the less fortunate. We have to help them in foundation, raise money. And it's something I grew up with, and it's something that I love because the biggest gift for me is when I'm giving to something to someone.
Yeah.
If I can make somebody happy, if I can even just put a smile on somebody's face, that it makes me feel so good. I swear to God, it's like the best feeling I can get.
Yeah. So, you know, you got onto the world stage.
Yes.
Right, representing Sweden.
So it started with my dad, of course.
Okay.
So my dad used to take me to the United Nations headquarters in New York, and I always was like looking up and thinking, it's so grand, it's so big. And he always said, my dear daughter, because my dad never calls me by my name.
Okay.
if I show you the text messages, he always calls me my dear daughter or my dear Nina.
Okay.
He actually never calls anyone by their first name.
Okay.
It's always Mr. and Mrs. Even the babies, he says Mr. and Mrs. Oh, he's very old school. Very old
I
school.
I love that.
Very old school. So, so every time he took me to the United Nations headquarters, I would look up and he would always say, my dear daughter, one day you will be here and you will speak at the biggest room. Mm-hmm. And I will be the proudest daddy in the world.
Oh, wow. That's
and he
amazing.
Said that. And I always knew I wanted to work with the UN and work with SDG, work with, you know, different sectors, humanitarian sectors, and help people. I always wanted that. So that's how it started. I got a call actually from one of my old friends that is a big, big guy. Which is fantastic. You know him very well. His name is Sergio.
Okay.
So he said, Nina, listen, do you want to be part of our group? We're UN and us for SDG looking for powerful women that have a voice, that done big careers in their life from early age, that can come on board and work with us.
Of course.
And that was 5 years ago.
That's incredible.
And since then... Yeah. It's been rolling.
It's been so okay. So from media personality to humanitarian to you highlighted fashion while you were you mentioned that you're a fashion icon yourself too.
Okay, so can I tell you about the fashion? This is a funny part because since again before social media, before anything was there, us people in television were always dressed by all the designers. So imagine me as an age of 14 being dressed by every single designer. Like that time, I don't think a lot of 15-year-olds or 14-year-olds would go to fashion weeks. But, you know, my mom is a very fashionable person. She used to always, because she lived in Paris, my mom, for many, many years. So she used to take me as a child to fashion shows in Paris. Like I was literally a child. But what I'm saying, from that age of 14, I started working closely with fashion designers and brands to dress me for my shows. So I developed a very, I was like going on red carpets, developed a very close relationships to a lot of designers around the world.
Okay.
So in that field, when the social media came, I already was a brand ambassador for so many and muse for so many designers.
Yeah.
And UAE was... Like nobody was dressed by any designers. I was the first girl that the designers like Ezra, Michael Cinco started dressing before social media.
Wow. Yeah.
So all the magazines always wrote about me and my fashion says, oh, Nina is so fashionable.
Yeah.
I was like in the best dressed in Harper's Bazaar and like in Vogue,
Ahlan. You're in
everything.
Ahlan,
in Grazia.
Yeah.
So it was literally at one, like at one point for years I was the most like I was almost my friends made a joke like Nina we're sick and tired of seeing your face everywhere on every campaign on every in every magazine in every newspaper but they always said oh your sense of fashion is amazing so why don't you do your own line because I worked closely since very young age with designers they dressed me I learned a lot of things obviously I don't know how to stitch but I know how to sketch.
Okay.
And I know the material. So then I was like, you know what? Let me try to do one collection. If it goes well, it goes well. If it doesn't...
You try.
I'm going to wear it myself. So it's not going to go to waste.
Yeah.
Because it's the things that I like to wear.
True.
I'm going to design. So then I designed that. And the first show, my whole collection was sold out.
That's amazing.
And I had no experience in mass production. So suddenly Gallery Lafayette told me they want the whole collection. And I was like, wait a minute. They're like, oh, we want 10 of this, 6 of that, 20 of this. I was like, oh my God, how do I do it? What do I do? I did just one tailor, one sample.
Yeah.
So then I had to like dig into that world of fashion, learn very quickly, fast, and start producing a lot. And it went quite well. The first 4 years,
okay.
But it was so stressful, like because I'm not, I didn't want this to become my major business.
Yeah.
So then Splash, which is huge, said, listen, Nina, why don't we do it for mass? So this
Yes, like, of course.
Ultra luxury, we designed it from us, and I was very happy that they gave me this amazing opportunity. Yeah. So I said yes, and then it was sold in Splash.
Okay.
So the mask could wear my stuff, which was very, very proud moment for me, and I loved it. And then COVID hits. Then COVID hits, and then obviously was no work.
Yeah.
And I got pregnant.
Oh, yeah.
So then it...
It changed your plans.
It changed my plans, and then I said, listen, that was a fantastic experience, but I don't have the capacity to do that as my main business.
Yes.
And then I put it on hold.
Yeah.
And it's on hold for indefinite.
Indefinitely.
But I loved it while doing it, and I learned, and it was a fantastic experience.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's great that you try, and that's what I always try to encourage people, you know, like life is all about learning and trying new experiences, and then, you know, like see what works for you and see what doesn't. I mean, I got into the fashion business once upon a time in my life. I just had a boutique store, but then
I didn't know that. I had a boutique store,
you know, selling women's dresses and wedding gowns. Wedding gowns is a big business. Yeah,
wedding house is amazing business.
It's a big business. Yes. It was very simple. I didn't do anything. All I did is I got the dresses from the US because they're dirt cheap, and I sold them for crazy profit in the UAE because
people amazing. Would
pay a premium.
Of course.
Yeah, so sometimes I was like, okay, you know what?
We had the money here. Yeah,
you just need, exactly.
Habibi, come to Dubai.
Yeah, because I remember my sister's dress, her wedding gown cost maybe like 70,000 dirhams. Oh, yes. I was like, what? Why would you do that? And then I realized you could get dresses in the States for like less, like $300, $500, $1,000. I was like, you're kidding me. This is the cost of dresses in the States?
Yes.
So I was like, oh, let me just import them here.
Amazing.
But yeah, it was as easy as that. But also even that was, it wasn't a passion. It wasn't something I really wanted to do. I tried it. I could get back into it at some point, but it wasn't my thing really. Yes. And now, you know, everything's moved to online, so it's even much, much easier. So it's not my field, but I know how it works.
Yes,
so yes, I think it's a great step. So moving on from fashion, you're obviously yourself a serial entrepreneur.
Yes, I am. I love, and I always been since I was a child. I always wanted to be in productions and different things and put my hands everywhere.
What's your next interesting project? What's going on?
Okay, so this is really, really fun.
2024. Okay.
We only have 2 weeks left.
Oh, you're
left.
Right. 2 weeks left of 2023. Not even. Right.
Are you 1 year behind?
No.
Well, 2023.
No, I'm just saying fast forward to 2023. Okay, what's happening now?
So for the past 6 months, first and foremost, we had a COP28, which was fantastic.
Yeah.
You know, I have to just give that as an input.
Okay.
What we, like UAE did.
Yes.
It's like mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, imagine the first week, it was over 83 billion US dollars in funds, pledges, and investments.
Yeah, that's amazing.
I mean, no COP ever done that.
Yes, that's
we
true.
Have to be so grateful and proud.
We're very proud, Dr. Sultan.
Yes, we are, UAE, Dr. Sultan. Yes, UAE, well, we are extremely proud. No, what it is beyond words. Yeah. And you know what I find quite interesting? That UAE, small country, of 52 years, managed to put on the best COP in the world.
Yeah.
And not only that, managed to give more money than most of the major countries, as America, such as a lot of other countries.
Yeah, yeah. China.
America, all the main Britain. Ones.
Actually, all the main polluters.
Do you exactly? Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Can you believe what this nation has done?
With like trillion-dollar economies.
Exactly. Yeah. And we gave so much fundings. Yeah. That makes me proud as an expat to live for 18 years in this country.
That's awesome. Honestly,
I get
Nina,
goosebumps
I tell
when
you,
I
tell
that.
This, I say this all the time. The UAE is successful because of people like yourself that live here. Honestly,
no.
Because we're lucky. We're very fortunate to have our leadership.
Yes.
But our leadership had the wisdom to attract people like yourself who allow for this kind of records to be made in this country. So we're always honored to have people like you. I always say this.
Thank you. Oh, thank you so
much. It's the residents that live here that
But thank you so much. But I have to
achievements.
But I also have to say that it's not only because of us, it's because what UAE gave us the opportunity to do.
Yes.
So when I came from New York here, we were here, the whole team, to film The Amazing World of Polo.
Okay.
It was another show that I created that was 13 episodes about polo and lifestyle of the polo, and Queen Elizabeth's team from London that was stationed here in Dubai. Yeah. They were doing their training here. So we were filming during that time. We were supposed to go to Argentina first, but then last minute change, we came to Dubai because the stations were here. Then Dubai TV got very interested in this show and said, oh, you know, wait a minute, we like to do this polo show as well. So then they gave me an opportunity to come and said, listen, when it's finished, would you like to work with us with the polo show? And it was such an honor for me. And imagine, during that 8 months I was supposed to be here, I developed such friendship and connection with the people here that I was like, all right, they're giving me an opportunity that I would get in probably 10 years in US.
Yes.
It would take me 10 years to get that position that I got.
Yeah.
So UAE gave me the opportunity to develop myself here. So then I started working for them. And when their show was finished, then I was like, wait a minute, it's only one production company here.
Yeah.
I opened my own production company. It was literally the second production company.
Wow.
In the UAE. Then that became like branches. Then like within 6 months, I opened the first lifestyle channel. And it was just rolling in opportunities with work. Yeah. I would never be able to open my own company here, a production company. Own production company anywhere else in the world. I would need hundreds of, like, millions of dollars of investment.
Yeah, yeah.
And I would compete with 1 million other companies.
Yeah, yeah. And so endless approvals.
Endless
and
approvals
this.
Yeah, and this and that. But UAE gave me that chance.
Nice.
And first working for their channel, then me opening my own company with my own money. And then opening other channels. And it was just unbelievable. I would never, nobody ever gets these opportunities that we get.
Yeah.
They say, oh, American dream, your dreams come true in America. I highly doubt that.
Yeah.
Your dreams come true in the UAE.
Yeah.
And it did for so many people.
That's amazing.
So many people.
So having said that, now you're working on a new venture for next year, for 2024.
Yes.
What's happening?
So for the past 6 months, I started to put together this beautiful children's spa.
Okay, yes. Nice. Congratulations.
And it's so many things around this spa. It's stories around it that I'm going to tell you hopefully next time. But what I wanted to do is to create a place that kids can go in and get mesmerized and get their beauty treatments and come out as a new person and feeling extremely confident.
That's awesome.
And that's what's gonna happen in 2024, and I cannot wait.
We are super excited, Nina. We can't wait to see this new venture. Hopefully we'll all be invited to the launch.
Of course you are, but imagine me opening a kids bar. Who would think? It's because I have kids, children, that I realize, oh my God, this is such an amazing business.
This is amazing. I mean, look, I know also your love for pets and, you know, the dog by Dia, your kids now. So I love how everyone or everything that's come into your life has inspired you to like do something for the people that you love the most, you know, which is amazing. And then, like even from helping refugees and then doing something for them and then for the environment and everything. So that just says so much about you, Nina. And I love that about you from the day that we've met. And you've what is also incredible is you're just consistent as an individual and your achievements. So, you know, we wish you all the best. No, thank you so much for coming today to Zeno Talks. I mean, if you have any final words of advice you want to share with people, please, we would like to hear that.
My final words to everyone, Omar, is the most important key in life. Always be respectful to everyone. Always be humble and stay kind. These are the three major keys to your success.
100%.
No matter what.
And Nina, I can say that you are a star and a proof of each and every one of those points you just mentioned. The
you
most
are
humble
so kind.
Nina ever.
You are too kind.
Thank you, my dear Nina, for joining today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Okay, take care.
I love you.